antenna. I heard a distant song upon the wind. It stirred a memory I'm fond of and made me long to hear her voice again. The whippoorwill pours out its song into the sky. The meadowlark calls out at morning light. The mourning dove sings with a sad and lonely cry that makes me wish I'd never let her fly away that night. So let me hear that lullaby she sang to me today. My Montana songbird stole my heart away. Soft and tender, quiet moments in the afterglow. The song she sang I still remember, and it's still the sweetest sound I've ever known. But I was a young crazy cowboy riding high. I would not let my heart get in the way. I knew there'd be other women waiting down the line, and so I broke her heart and let that songbird fly away. So let me hear that song again she sang to me the day my Montana songbird stole my heart away.
Hey, what do you think?
I think we ought to go back to our good old barn dance.
Well, you've just heard the voice of Howard Lyman, a gentleman who's from Montana himself. And I just serenaded you with Curly Jim Musgrave singing along with Michael Fleming, a CD I picked up at a cowboy poetry festival.
I'll tell you what, now that's the top 10 in my book right there. I mean, you couldn't have done better.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad, because sometimes you pick it and you don't know. But I thought, Montana, how could I not? And I'm going to close with an ode to tofu that you might like.
Hey, now I'll go for that.
Yeah. Well, hey, Howard, what a thrill and a treat and an honor and all that good stuff to have you here. Let me tell our listeners a little bit about you for anybody who still may not know who you are, and then let's chat. Howard Lyman, the voice you just heard, is a remarkable person for many different reasons. Many people know him as the mad cowboy who in 1996 went on the Oprah Winfrey TV show to discuss food safety issues because he is considered by many to be an international expert on mad cow disease. Howard's story is truly inspirational. His family had raised crops and animals for four generations in central Montana. In 1979, a tumor located on the inside of his spinal cord paralyzed him from the waist down. During this period, he became acutely aware that the chemically intensive agricultural practices he learned and applied were destroying his family's health and the land, and would eventually destroy the planet. In a transformative moment, Howard Lyman dedicated his life to changing unsustainable practices, and 20 years later, he's still on the road, traveling 100,000 miles a year and speaking to groups all over the world in order to promote a healthier environment. for our children and for our grandchildren. Besides traveling, Howard Lyman has written two books, the most recent released last fall, No More Bull, and now has three DVDs, which include the newly released The Mad Cowboy documentary. And it should be noted, in 1998, Howard Lyman co-authored The Mad Cowboy, Plain Truth from the Cattle Rancher That Won't Eat Meat. Howard Lyman is president and founder of Voice for a Viable Future. He has been honored with many awards, including the Courage of Conscience Award in 1997 at the Peace Abbey in Boston. And in 2002, he was inducted into the Vegetarian Hall of Fame. John Robbins, author of Diet for a New America and the Food Revolution, wrote a tribute to Howard during that event. And part of what he said was, Howard Lyman is a big man, not because of his physical stature, but because of his moral stature. What makes Howard Lyman so unique is that he has given his life with all his talent and dedication to steering us toward a sane, ethical, and grateful relationship with what gives us life. Wow.
I'll tell you what, I couldn't have written that better myself.
I'll tell you, you're a pretty impressive guy. I'm so honored to be here in your presence. So, you and Oprah.
Well, she's the one that got me sued. You have to remember.
Yeah.
I went on the show to tell the truth. All I did is I stood up and said, look, we're grinding up cows, feeding them to cows. It wasn't my fault that Oprah said, that just stops me cold. I'll never again eat a burger.
Did she pay your legal fees at least?
No.
Wow.
No. But we were only in court for 6 years. It only cost a few $100,000. We won 4 times. You know, what it comes down to, it's not what we know that gets us in trouble. It's what we know that isn't so. Mm-hmm. We have the idea that somebody's out there and they're looking after our welfare. They're taking care of us. They make sure that we have good, clean, healthy food. Isn't it amazing? This last week, we ended up with another case of mad cow disease. And the height of hypocrisy, USDA decides they're going to test fewer animals. You talk about the idea of don't look, don't find. I mean, they've got it down pat.
So what is the deal with that? This is the third one. First Washington State, then Texas, and now Alabama, an isolated cow. And that makes me a little nervous. How do we know it's just one old cow?
Well, it is only one old cow out of each one old herd. And remember that we're only looking at less than 0.1% of the animals that go to slaughter. European Union tests every mature animal that goes to slaughter. Japan tests every animal that goes to slaughter. We test 0.1%, and then we decide that's too many. You know, I think that they've decided that we really don't care about the consumers just because we have a disease that's 100% fatal, incubates from 10 to 40 years. Why worry about it? You know, let's just enroll them in the army and we'll shorten their life in the first place.
So you just said a whole mouthful there. 0.1% is considered too much for checking in our country for a disease that incubates from 10 to 40 years?
That's correct, and is 100%
fatal. 100%
fatal.
So whose idea was it to feed dead cows to living cows?
Well, they looked at it and they said, you know, about half of the slaughter weight of an animal is unsaleable to humans. We either have to pay to put it in the dump or, gee, why don't we just cook it? It's high protein. We'll turn around and we'll feed it right back to them. You know, but what else have we been feeding them? We collect chicken manure. They found that a cow will eat up to 80% of their ration in chicken manure. Now we have bird flu out there. Wouldn't this be wonderful? We can get a bird with bird flu. We can feed it to the cows. The cows can eat it. You can get your new case of bird flu down at the fast food burger place. I mean, we're really making tracks in this new eating habit.
What actually causes the problem when a living cow eats a dead cow?
Well, the first thing is that a cow is an absolute herbivore. They were never meant to be a carnivore, never meant to be a cannibal. And so their body, when they take in a cow, their body looks at it and says there's nothing to worry about there because that's us. And so anything that cow that they ate had, any disease, they just assimilate it right into the cow. And all of a sudden, you bypass all of the things that nature have had so that you don't transmit disease from one to another. You bypass all of that. And so remember, it takes about the amount of material that it would take to cover the sharp end of a pin to infect a human for something that's a 100% fatal. If you or I today went down to the local burger joint, we got a 4-ounce burger, but instead of eating it, we went to a DNA lab. we would find there's anywhere from 200 to 1,000 different cows in one 4-ounce burger. Do you feel comfortable that one of those didn't have mad cow disease? And our government says, well, we're testing way too many animals anyway.
What do you think that's all about at the federal level?
What's money. It's all about money.
So who's behind that?
Well, it happens to be the multinational companies out there they bought the best government that money can buy. They don't want people focusing on where their food comes from. They don't want them to look at that there's a good chance that it can be infected with some sort of a disease out there. And so they look at it and say, you know, if they don't know, they're going to eat it. And at 10 to 40 years, they're going to die down the line. And so nobody will really know what they had or not.
So on the upside, this is kind of a depopulation strategy for an overpopulated planet, maybe, huh?
Oh, sure. You know, this really works well. Can you imagine that the first law of business is that the consumer is always right? Well, when we ended up with mad cow in the U.S., Japan said, you know, if you're not going to test your animals, we're not going to buy them. Well, an outfit down in Missouri said, hey, there's no problem there. We'll test. We'll pay for it. We'll train our own. We'll set up our own lab. We'll have them certified by USDA. And Japan said, well, boy, if you do that, we'll buy. And when they went to USDA, USDA said, we will not allow you to do that. Even no cost to the taxpayer. State of the art. The customer wanted it, and our government said to them, we're not going to allow you to test. And you know why? Because they didn't want it to come out and say there's a whole lot more of this out here than what we're talking about.
It's kind of sinister.
Well, ask yourself this question. You know, they say the government right now says that we only have about one case of the human form of mad cow disease per million Americans. That's about 300 cases. But we have 4.5 million Americans diagnosed as having Alzheimer's. The symptoms of Alzheimer's, the symptoms of the human form of mad cow disease, are very close. Well, Pittsburgh Veterans Hospital take people that die that have been diagnosed as Alzheimer's. They take out their brain. They look at them. 5.5% misdiagnosed. Yale University did the same thing. 13% misdiagnosed. If we have 4.5 million Americans and about 10% of them are misdiagnosed with Alzheimer's that really have the human form of mad cow disease, that means we have 450,000 cases. How did we get from 300 to 450,000 if somebody's not lying?
So when they autopsied, they actually found Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease in these Alzheimer's patients.
That's correct. They found 5.5% in Pittsburgh, 13% in the Yale study. About 10% of them were misdiagnosed.
Wow.
Doesn't that make you wonder about your government?
Catches my breath. Well, no, nothing makes me wonder about this particular crowd in power. but that's pretty sickening. You are a fourth-generation Montana rancher.
That's correct.
That's big meat-eating country. Your father and your grandfather were holistic or ecologically sustainable ranchers and farmers.
Organic, yep.
And then you made a big old change.
Well, I went to Montana State University. I wanted to feed a hungry world. I learned about herbicides, pesticides, hormones, and medication. I mean, I graduated with a degree in agriculture. I thought I was the Donald Trump of agriculture. Can you imagine what a thrill it was the first time after I took an organic farm and turned it into an agribusiness where I had 7,000 head of cattle, 12,000 acres of crop, and 30 employees, wrote a check for $1 million, and it didn't bounce, and I thought, wow, I'm the Donald Trump of agriculture. What a fool. What a fool. You know, 1979, when I was paralyzed and they told me I had less than one chance in a million I'd ever walk again, that really made me stop and look at my education, my writing big checks. You know, 7 combines at $100,000 a piece, I'd give them away in a heartbeat to be able to walk again. You know, I think that the people that are listening today need to understand that we are in charge of our own fork. We're the ones that decide what we're going to put into our bodies. We're the ones that are spending the dollars. We should ask ourselves the question, you know, every time I spend a dollar, I'm voting on the future. What kind of a future do I want? We have been way too passive for too long. It's about time that we wake up that there's some opportunities to educate ourselves right now so that we can make better choices. Everybody out there doesn't have to become a vegan like me. But every one of us better make some changes in our lifestyle or we're not going to be around very long.
So for people who still want to eat a bit of cow now and then, what about the free range that are advertised?
Well, any time you get something that's organic or free range, is it better than the other? Absolutely. You know, if there's no herbicides, pesticides, hormone medication, is it better? Sure it is. But let's look at the standard American diet. Here's the thing that's wrong with the standard American diet. It has too much protein, too much fat, too much cholesterol, and not enough fiber. Those are the four things that everybody in the health industry will agree with. Let's say that we have the most pristine meat in the world. Certified, organic, free range, never any of the bad stuff. What do we have? Too much protein, too much fat, too much cholesterol, zero fiber. Is it better than the other? Sure. Is it good for your body? No.
What's a typical meal for you for breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Well, I would say that the best thing in the world for me in the morning is to chop up an apple, chop up a banana, cook some oatmeal, add some walnuts to it, some grind up some flaxseed and put in it. If there's some blueberries around, throw those in, a little almond milk on it. That's breakfast. The lunch of choice, a vegan burrito, lettuce, tomatoes, onions, beans, salsa. Remember, you can eat an overshoe with salsa, the number one condiment in the world. That's a good lunch. How about dinner? A large green lettuce salad, you know, tomatoes and onions and celery and every vegetable that you can imagine in it. And then how about some pasta, you know, with tomato sauce, eggplant in it. You know, when I was a carnivore, I thought, you know, boy, what do those vegetarians eat? They must really get bored eating the same thing all the time. And they don't even know how to spell things like amaranth or quinoa or, you know. So I eat a more varied diet today than I ever did when I was a carnivore. There's nobody in the world that loves food more than I do. And in the fact of being a good vegan, I lost about 150 pounds. You know, I'm alive today, which if I hadn't changed my diet, I don't think I would be.
So what are your labs? What's your cholesterol like?
Well, my cholesterol went from 300 to 135. I've had cattlemen tell me, you got to be careful. Your cholesterol may get too low. You know, there's never been a study in the history of the world that's shown that cholesterol could be too low. But do you realize that the largest ongoing heart study in the world, the Framingham study, not one person in 40 years has had a heart attack that had a cholesterol reading below 150. One out of every two Americans are dying of heart disease, and in 40 years, not one person had a heart attack in the largest study in the world that had a cholesterol reading below 150. And at one time, mine was 300. You talk about a case waiting to happen. How many folks realize that half of all Americans that have heart attacks today have cholesterol readings that are considered to be average, 212. And half of the people that the first heart attack is the last one they ever have because they die from it.
You know, this is interesting information in light of all the information we're hearing about the statin drugs. In fact, there was a new report this week on yet another new statin. And I think in the future, statins are going to be the Vioxx. Drug.
The Viagra.
Maybe the Viagra. But the statins are you know, prescribed pretty indiscriminately in Western medicine, I think.
Sure.
The minute your cholesterol is around 200, they don't even look at your HDL to your LDH ratio. They just throw you on statins. Now, what you're saying is, by simply changing your diet, you didn't need to take statins.
Sure. The first thing that we
And they're not even acknowledging that in these studies.
Well, but the first thing to understand is human physiology. You know, when you take a cholesterol into your body, and all cholesterol comes from animal products, comes from meat, comes from dairy. When you take cholesterol into your body then creates it, running it through your body, and instead of eliminating it, it just keeps building it up in there. If you want to get cholesterol out of your body, the first thing is don't put it in. The second thing is raise the fiber in your diet, because the fiber is what takes the cholesterol out of your body. This idea that you're going to take any drug, a statin or anything else, and think that there's not going to be a side effect to it, you got to be smoking the number one crop out of Oregon to believe something like that. You know, what it comes down to is if you want to live anywhere from 5 to 15 years longer and healthier, the closer you get to a total complex carbohydrate plant-based diet, the longer and healthier you're going to live. You know, I just went to my wife's 50th class reunion in Great Falls, Montana. We walked in the door. She and I walked in the door exactly the same weight we weighed when we graduated 50 years ago. One-third of her class had already died. Walked in the door, you never saw so many canes, crutches, and walkers in all of your life. Everybody standing around talking about their latest operation, their favorite doctor, where you could get the cheapest meds. Nobody wanted to talk to us about our diet until I went to the bathroom. I walk into the bathroom, some clown comes up to me and says, do you ever sneak out and get a burger? You ever go to McDonald's? Now, what do you say to somebody in the bathroom about their diet? Well, I look them in the eye. And I said to him, by the way, does your poop float? You know, boy, did that quiet him down. What you need to realize is there's always an opportunity to educate people about making better choices. Whether it happens to be at a VegetaFest they're having here in Portland or whether it's, you know, in the bathroom at your class reunion. Tell people the truth about what's going on, because when I went from well over 300 pounds to the same weight I had when I graduated from high school, it was because I changed my diet. It wasn't drugs.
Well, what about those poops? Should they float or sink?
They should float. Because the higher the fiber in your diet, the more likely it is that it's going to float. The higher the fiber in your diet, the more cholesterol you're going to get rid of, the less problems you're going to have with the stomach cancer, intestinal cancer, rectal cancer. So fiber is extremely important, and the biggest problem that most Americans have right now today is they have too little fiber in their diet. They're worried about constipation and things like that. And remember good old Duke Wayne, when he died, ended up with about 6 or 7 pounds of rotting, putrefying flesh in his intestinal tract that they found after they did the autopsy. He didn't ride into the sunset one happy camper.
Yeah, I've heard as much as 25 pounds of fecal material can be in the gut at any given time.
That's exactly right.
That's a pretty big amount.
Yeah, and the thing about it is it should pass in a day. You know, if you take a lion over in Africa, the lion goes and sends his wife out, the lioness, she makes the kill, he shows up, eats first, goes over and lays down under the tree and goes to sleep. Well, he's a true carnivore. He's got to get what he ate through his body and out quickly before it rots and putrefies, and what he ate in the morning is going to move out before that night. That's the idea of a true carnivore. Look at humans. We put it in, it goes into our digestional tract, and it's going back and forth and back and forth, and it's there for days, and it's rotting and putrefying. And what are we seeing? We're seeing intestinal cancer, rectal cancer going up astronomically.
Well, all sorts of diseases coincide, all the way up to, we have a naturopath who's a resident on this segment, and he even talks about skin diseases that come from a bad gut.
Oh, sure.
So it's at the basis of everything, nutrition. But another thing that occurs to me while you're talking is there's been a huge amount of interest in and advertising lately about the importance of getting a colonoscopy every year. Now, that didn't used to be the case.
Of course not.
We didn't hear about it every year. And what I'm thinking of now is, as I'm listening to you, is that there's maybe a sinister rationale in the medical community as well, where, you know, you go into a hospital and they talk about heart-healthy food, but you get in the cafeteria and they sell triglycerides, basically. It's not heart-healthy food, and it's not particularly heart-healthy when it gets to the sick patients who are in their beds trying to heal. So this really makes me wonder what's going on.
Well, the first thing is don't trust anybody whose their business is called a practice. And the next thing, anybody that thinks that the medical community isn't more about making money than anything else, you go see a doctor and the first thing is on his mind is, how do I make my car payment? How do I get my second home paid for? Do you ever notice when you go out and you see some plant eaters and you take a look at them, what's the first thing that strikes you? It happens to be their skin. How bright and healthy looking their skin is, it is directly related to the diet that you're on. When you see somebody that's on a high meat and dairy diet, you can see it in their skin. You see the eruptions on their skin and the whole thing. It's not that one thing is totally adverse to the other. They are directly related. And so for the listeners that are out there today, what I would say to you is you don't have to become a full-fledged vegan. Just go 60 days without eating an animal product. Don't have to go to a doctor. You don't need an appointment. Just ask yourself after 60 days of eating no animal product, do I feel better today than I did in the past? And if you can say no to that, you call me up and I'll take you out and buy you whatever you want for dinner.
What do you eat for dessert?
Well, I think one of the best things in the world for dessert happens to be fruit. But they have all kinds of desserts out there right now. My wife the other night made a chocolate pie that was a vegan chocolate pie that, I mean, you could actually kill for. It was wonderful. Had bananas in it and coconut on it. You should have come to my house, you know. Oh, I'm glad you didn't because I had more pie. But,
well, call me. I mean, I would fly to that one. You talk about having switched from your traditional family history of organic, sustainable, ecological farming to chemicalized agribusiness, and then you got this tumor inside your spinal cord. How did you make the connection? And what did the medical community think about your making that connection?
Well, I asked my doctor, and my doctor happened to have been a good friend of mine. I'd been in business with him for years, and it was interesting because he was a world-class surgeon that flew all over the world and did very delicate operations on the brain and the spine, and they called him old cut and run. You know, he would go and run to the airport and get on a plane, do the cutting, and then fly back out. Anyway, he was a good friend of mine, and so I said to Alex, I said, Alex, what caused that tumor on my spinal cord? And he said, well, it was adolescent cells that were stimulated to grow, probably by the chemicals you were using on the farm. Well, remember, my brother had just died of Hodgkin's disease. I find that Hodgkin's disease was caused by a chemical we were using in Vietnam called Agent Orange, 2,4,5-T. We were using thousands of gallons of it on the farm. Why he ended up dying from it and I didn't, I don't know. But I ended up with this tumor. I couldn't walk. I had odds of 1 in 1,000,000 to walk out of the hospital. I walked out with a 1 in 1,000,000 operation, but I'll tell you, I've never forgot what it was like. I put my feet on the floor and I couldn't feel my floor. And I know right now that you can take everything in the world that I have, but if I have the right to walk, I'm the luckiest person in the world. So when I walked out of the hospital, I thought, boy, what we need to do is become organic farmers. We got to cut the chemicals out of the farming. And so I go to my banker. Remember, I got 7,000 head of cattle, 12,000 acres of crop, 30 employees. I've just been paralyzed and recovering for 2 years. Financially, I'm in tough shape. I go see my banker and I say to him, I said, I want to borrow some money. I want to start farming with nature. Now, my banker, he looks at me and says, what in the world does that mean? I said, I want to become an organic farmer. And he looks at me and he leans back and he laughs. He says, you want me to lend you money? And you're not going to spend it with my other customers, the chemical dealer, the pharmaceutical dealer, the fertilizer dealer? He said, there is not going to be any days like that. So 1987, I sold my farm, I paid my debts, and then I went out and started talking to other farmers about not making the mistakes I made. Now, I started out, I didn't think it had anything to do with the way I ate. You know, here I was, a 300-pound football player. When I quit playing football, I kept eating the same way. I got well over 300 pounds. My blood pressure is sky high. My cholesterol's over 300. I'd sit down and have lunch, and my nose would bleed. But remember, I'm from Montana. I'd rather be caught riding a stolen horse and admitting to somebody I was thinking about becoming a vegetarian, so I became a closet vegetarian. I didn't tell anybody about it. The mainstays of my diet were lettuce and dairy products, and for 1 year, that's my diet. I lose some weight. My blood pressure comes down slightly. My cholesterol comes down slightly. I thought, wow, if I can do that being the world's worst vegetarian, just think what I could do if I became a vegan, and I could spell vegan. I became a vegan. I lost 130 pounds. My blood pressure went from sky high to normal. My cholesterol from 300 to 135. I'll tell you what, I saved my life changing my diet.
And so vegan, for people who still don't know?
Eat nothing with a face, liver, or a mother.
I really like that. I want to remind our listeners, you are Howard Lyman. You are the former Montana rancher who converted to a vegan diet and have probably become one of the foremost experts on mad cow disease across the land. I want to remind them also there is a Veg Fest, a compassionate living fair, that will happen on Sunday, March 18.
Saturday,
March 18 from 10. Thank you. 10 to 6 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, which is Southwest 12th Avenue and Main Street in downtown Portland. It is a $5 admission. There will be a number of speakers starting at 10:30, George Eisman. You will be speaking at noon. You are Howard Lyman. At 1:30, Bo Rinaldi. At 3 o'clock, Kendra Kimbiaruskas. And at 4:30, George Eisman again. Howard Lyman once again at noon at the First Unitarian Church tomorrow, at the Veg Fest, a compassionate living fair. What else is going to be going on at this event?
Well, you know, this is probably the greatest thing that's ever happened to Portland. You can come to this Veg Fair, cost you $5. You can get, there's over 40 food booths there that you can get free samples of food. You've some of the finest chefs in Portland are going to be there doing cooking demonstrations. You get to get up close and meet people, ask questions. There's going to be all kinds of information, literature there. I'm going to be there all day. Anybody that walks up to me and wants to talk about any question they have, I'd be more than happy to talk to them about it. I'll even have some of my books, my DVDs there. You know, my documentary that I just finished is going to be on public television nationwide on Earth Day. Can you imagine an old Montana cowboy puts together a documentary? Mm-hmm. It's going to be seen on 400 channels nationwide. I can't hardly wait. But, you know, come to this. You invest $5, an afternoon of your time, and you can get more information that give you the opportunity to live anywhere from 5 to 15 years longer. Look people in the eye. Ask them. Taste the food. Try it out. There's all kinds of local nonprofit groups that are going to be there sharing information with them. You'll meet, there's over 100 volunteers that have volunteered their time to show up. I don't think there's anywhere in the state of Oregon that you can come and invest less and get more out of it that'll have a greater impact in the rest of your life. So what I would say to somebody is, mark it on your calendar. Come down, come early. George Eisman is one of the first speakers. He is one of the most amazing individuals that ever graced the face of the earth. To hear what George has to say, he does a program on reading labels that are on food that is just absolutely unbelievable. You know, he'll tell you right now, don't believe anything that you read on the front of a label. No matter what it says on the front, it doesn't mean anything about what's inside of it. You can lie on the front of it to no end. Just save yourself all of the grief. Come and listen to his program. George Eisman is one of the most delightful, entertaining, informative speakers that I've ever heard in my life. Show up at 12 o'clock. I'll be more than happy to tell you how this mad cowboy went from being a fourth-generation cattle rancher to getting sued with Oprah. I'll tell you some stories about that trial that'll just curl your toes. Can you imagine being in a courtroom with 16 lawyers for 6 weeks and not learn something? So I would say for an investment of $5, you can get more than you ever wanted to eat of some of the most delicious food in the world, meet some of the greatest activists in the state of Oregon, and we'll have a good time.
One of the things about labeling just struck a note with me. There's been some legislation pending about labeling, and the issue, and I don't know what the status is right now in the Congress, but it's recent, and the question was whether or not labeling would continue.
Well, let's look at some.
Such as it is, it still has some value for people.
Well, it does have value if you know how to read it.
Right.
But, you know, we've passed a law that says that you have country of origin. You know, if you buy a product You should have the right as a consumer to know whether it came from Chile or Cuba or Romania or China, wherever it came from, because you want to know what are the standards in the country that made my product. They passed that. But this administration keeps putting that on hold. They keep rolling it back and rolling it back. It was slated to be in effect long before now, still not here. Next thing is, do you realize there's a lot of products out there like your pet food? Let's say you go down and you find that it says 100% lamb, and you find that your pet just loves it. So you say, boy, that's what I'm going to buy. Do you realize there's nothing in the law that says anything in that bag has to be any lamb at all? It could be all beef. It could be all dog and cat. It doesn't make any difference. Pet food does not have to be in the bag what it says on the label. There is no requirement to tell the truth. On the front of something, it will say fat-free, you know, low cholesterol. That doesn't have to be true. It doesn't even have to be related to what's in there, because what's on the front is not regulated by the law. So you have to learn to be able to read a label and understand what it is that you want to look at. Let's go to the back of the label that has to be somewhat accurate. And so it says there that it is the amount of fat per serving. Let's say that it has 11% fat per serving, and you look at it and say, well, that's really not too bad. And then you go and look and see what the serving size is. Maybe it'll be two chips or one wafer. So, you know, you have to learn to be able to read the labels. Forget about what's on the front. Don't pay any attention to it, because it's all lies on the front. That in the back, what they're trying to do now is abrogate it. They're trying to make it more difficult to calculate what's in it. They're trying to put off things like country of origin, of where something came from. You and I both, we would go down to a store. If it said that it was an organic product from Oregon, we would feel a lot more comfortable with it than if it said an organic product that came from Mexico. I'm telling you what, I've been to Mexico. I see what's happening in their organic standards down there. I wouldn't trust it came across the border if it was blessed by the Pope. So why shouldn't we tell the people in Oregon the truth about where something came from? Those are the things they're trying to keep off of the label. Those are the things they're trying to change. Come tomorrow to the Veg Fest, and people like George Eisman, who is one of the best in the world, can tell you how to read a label that will be the best thing that ever happened for you and your family in a lifetime.
So we should really be eating whole foods.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what this really boils down to, doesn't it?
Sure. You know, we realize that your body was designed to run on complex carbohydrates. Did you ever see a marathon runner that the day before the marathon went out to the Ruth Chris Steakhouse to load up on beef so he could run a marathon? Our bodies were designed to run on complex carbohydrates. When something comes in nature's own wrapper, like a carrot or an apple or an orange or a banana, it's a whole lot better for you than if something that has been manufactured, something that's refined. You know, refined carbohydrates are a thing to keep out of your diet. Complex carbohydrate, raw food type of diet is the best thing you can do for yourself. You'll look better, you'll feel better, you'll have more energy, and Lord knows you're going to live longer.
Okay, another question is that comes up in your literature is you compare and contrast the Atkins diet, the South Beach diet, other fad diets. Some of these are supported by the American Medical Association, well, not the agency so much, but various elements in the American Medical Association, and that would be doctors. What are your thoughts about these diets?
Well, I wrote a book that was called No More Bull, and what we did is we took these fad diets and we laid out the facts about them against a good diet. And remember, there's a whole lot of lousy vegetarian and vegan diets. Just because you're a vegan doesn't mean you have a healthy diet. So what I did is I wrote a book about the difference between good diets and bad diets. Let's look at the Atkins diet, for example. Dr. Atkins said he was on his diet for 25 years. He ends up dying, and they do an autopsy, and the autopsy comes back and says he's obese. They find that he has had a heart attack. They find that his coronary system is occluded, that his diet, was not healthy. And then his wife said, you know, well, he just slipped and fell down and hit his head, probably had a stroke. But the autopsy came back and said, I have a guy that was on his own diet for 25 years is obese. Now, there's something wrong with something like that. So what we did in the book, No More Bull, is we look at things like the Atkins diet, the Zone diet, the South Beach diet. And then we talk about, you know, the lousy vegetarian diets. Chips and Twinkies are a vegetarian diet. Are they good for you? No. So it's not just about being on a plant-based diet. It's about being on a good plant-based diet. It's about being able to tell the difference. It's about finding that you can go out there and live longer and healthier if you do it right. What's the best way to do that? Go to something like the Veg Fest, where you can go in and meet some of the best people in the world up front, close, talk to them about it. People that have been on these kind of diets for 25 or 30 years, take a look at them. Are they obese? Are they overweight? Does it look like they're about to have a heart attack? Use some common sense. Common sense is the most uncommon commodity in the world today.
And again, you are Howard Lyman. We're talking about the Veg Fest tomorrow at the First Unitarian Church from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. A donation at the door, small amount of money. Howard Lyman, here's another question for you. Is it still legal to feed rendered, dead and ground up parts of animals to cows?
Absolutely. You know,
okay, that's what I thought.
We're still feeding dogs and cats, ground up dogs and cats to cows. We're still feeding pigs, chickens, turkeys, and horses to cows. We're still feeding chicken manure to cows. We're feeding ground up cows to pigs, chickens, turkeys, and horses. You know, we're worried now about the bird flu coming in, and we should, because almost every health authority in the world is not talking about if it's going to happen. They're talking about when it's going to happen. We're still grinding up chickens and feeding them to cows. Well, what a stupid thing can we do? You realize that almost every civilized nation in the world now has decided not to feed animals to animals. We're still feeding cow blood to calves. I just read in England where they now have a whole number of people that are coming down with the human form of mad cow disease because they got blood transfusions from a person that had CJD. And we're still feeding cow blood to calves. You know, we have the best government that money can buy. When are we going to wake up and say if we're going to protect ourselves, we got to get involved in ourselves. We got to educate ourselves. We got to make some better decisions. Who would have ever thought after the Oprah trial, when USDA came out with regulations that said we're no longer going to feed cows, sheep, and goats, back to cows, sheep, and goats, and that was the regulation, and lo and behold, when they went back out and looked at it, they found 25% of the people out there had never heard about the regulation. They weren't paying any attention to it. They were still feeding cows to cows. And if you read the press yesterday, they said the cow in Alabama that had mad cow disease, not to worry because she was older than the ban out there, and so she could have been infected before they stopped feeding cows to cows. I'm telling you what, we're still feeding animals to cows. We're still feeding sick cows to all of the other animals. And when we grind up dogs and cats and feed them to cows and they still got their collars on and that sort of thing does not impress me as government regulation.
One of the things that concerns me about this is what if we begin to bury large numbers of these mad cows eventually and maybe even wild fowl, which they're now talking about as early as this fall. What happens when you grow crops on top of soil that has maybe mad cows underneath it?
Well, let's look at exactly what happened in Iceland. They had sheep that had scrapie, a spongiform disease. They removed all the sheep. They kept them off for years. They went to Australia, where the sheep don't have scrapie, brought in the sheep into Iceland, put them out there in the range, and within 2 years, they had picked it up out of the soil that was there. NIH took scrapie material, buried it in the backyard, left it there for years, dug it up. It was still infectious. In England, they had 4.5 million cows that they killed, incinerated over 1,000 degrees, and was still infectious. Now they store the ash in World War II blimp hangers. Do you think it's not in the water, that it's not in the ground, that we're not passing it on? The spongiform disease in deer and elk, chronic wasting disease, they can transfer it by just touching noses, licking a common salt block. What are we doing in Iowa or in Wyoming? They are still feeding elk on the grounds out there so that they all come together, they all congregate. They're feeding them in the wintertime. The worst thing in the world for passing on this disease. It started in one state, in one herd, and now it's in 13 states. Wisconsin, they're trying to eliminate the deer in what they call the hot zone, trying to kill 26,000 deer. They've been working on it for 5 years. They've not been able to kill any more than the number of fawns that are born every year.
Are we talking about prions here?
We're talking about prions.
Talk about prions for a minute so people know why we're saying that this is so persistent.
Well, let's look at it. A prion, the infectious agent of the spongiform disease that is 100% fatal, is an abnormal protein. An abnormal protein has no DNA, has no RNA, was never living. You can't kill something that was never living. And we have found that it persists in the environment for Lord only knows how long, because we have not been able to find a way to denature it with temperature, with radiation, with bleach, or any of those things. We're talking about an abnormal protein in association with a normal protein turns it abnormal. In a human body, it eats a hole in the nerve tissue like the brain. A lady called me yesterday, her father-in-law, perfectly healthy, vice president of the bank, active, environmentally friendly guy. He sits down, eats breakfast, reaches in with his spoon to his bowl of oatmeal, picks it up, and instead of putting his spoon in his mouth, he sticks himself in the eye. His brain would not allow him to do something he'd done in his entire life, be able to feed himself. And within 9 months, the guy is dead. He has holes in his brain. They do a sample. They send it to CDC. Sure enough, he has CJD. He died of the human form of mad cow disease. And guess what they put on his death certificate? Do you think he died of a spongiform disease? Nope. That's not what they put on there. We are lying to the American people what a lot of folks are dying from. They're dying from this disease, which comes from an abnormal protein which we have no idea in the world how to get rid of.
So these prions that have no DNA, no RNA, that were never living and cannot be killed, I'm having a hard time understanding whether these are naturally occurring or somehow being generated in a more mysterious way.
Well, they're naturally occurring. You know, it happened in about 1 in 1 million of every species, which really wasn't a whole lot. It did not cause a big amount of problem because we were not involved in cannibalism. It was not until we started taking animals, the 1 in 1 million that were like that, grinding it up and infecting thousands. That's what happened. This is a naturally occurring thing, has happened down through history. It was not a problem until we started the cannibalism. A cow was never designed to eat another cow.
So that cow that might have had the mutation would have died by itself.
That's right.
But wouldn't that have contaminated the surrounding area?
It would have contaminated the surrounding area, but a very small area compared to what it was like when you figure it takes only the amount of material to cover the sharp end of a pin to infect something else. Let's say a cow weighs 1,000 pounds, ground up, turned into feed. Do you realize there's enough material there to infect millions? So you got one cow that's laying there, you got an area that is maybe 4 or 5 square feet that's infected. What happens when you have 1 million of them that are out there? It gives you an idea of the magnitude of the problem we're talking about.
Of course, and we have to mention that this gets into dairy products, it gets into milk, to which is added the insult of plastic wrap, which also gets into a lot of these dairy products, which I think is all related to the incidence of breast cancer. I just want to put that out for people to remember that dairy products are not free of this. Is that correct?
My recommendation to everybody is remember I came from the largest dairy farm in the state of Montana. The first thing I recommend to people to take out of their diet is dairy. Do you realize that 87% of the protein in dairy products is a thing called casein? Casein is like dumping gasoline on a fire of what it does to the growth of a cancerous tumor in a living thing. And so for me, I say to somebody, the first thing that I recommend that you take out of your diet is dairy. We were not designed to consume the mammary secretion of a cow. That was for a calf, not a human. And when we get involved in that, there's all kinds of bad things. Do you realize what high percentage of people around the world that are lactose intolerant, that should never be consuming a dairy product? Mm-hmm. And here we are. We're out there trying to send our excess dairy supplies to the hungry people in the world, and all we're doing is making them sick.
Not good. Sounds like Oprah might have been right. Howard Lyman, we're just about at the end of this hour. My goodness, thank you so much. What a gift you are. And here's my last scary question to you. Do I have to give up yogurt from organically grown blah, blah, blah?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Remember?
Everything I can do, but not yogurt.
Well, wait a minute.
Okay,
remember,
help me through it.
This is really simple. All you have to do is look at it. What was the advice the crazy rancher gave me? Nothing with a face, liver, or a mother. Did your organic yogurt, did it come from something that had a mother? Did it have a liver? Did it have a face? Should I eat it? No.
Howard, I need a grief ceremony to deal with this. Thank you so much. I want to remind our listeners you are Howard Lyman, VegFest, a compassionate living fair tomorrow at the First Unitarian Church at Southwest 12th Avenue and Main Street, downtown Portland, from 10 until 6, small donation at the door. Again, Howard will be speaking at noon, but he's urging you to get there at 10:30 to hear George Eisman talk about labeling, and there are speakers all afternoon. There'll be food to taste and I assume recipes. Help yourself figure out how to move to the next stage, which is being a vegan. And Howard, you're just an absolute national treasure. Thank you so much.
Well, remember, the actual national treasure is KBOO. Can you imagine? None of this would be out there where you could hear it if it was not for public radio. When it comes time to be involved, come down, become a volunteer, put some time and effort into it to make sure that this true national treasure never disappears, because we would not have the community we have without KBOO, and become a part of it.
Well, you are an absolute dream. Is there anything I have not asked you that you want to say in 1 minute or so?
Yeah, the one thing that I would say is I'm like a lot of you that are sitting out there. At one time in my life, the last thing in the world that I would have ever considered was changing my diet, because I just loved the way I was eating. But when I decided to change, when I did it, it was not easy. There was not a thing like a VegFest that you could go to and learn a lot of things. I had to stumble along, read a little here, learn a little there. But when I started talking to people that really knew what it was all about, that helped me down the path, doing it right, remembering that there are lousy vegetarian diets, lousy vegan diets, but there's good ways of doing it. Can you imagine what it's like to look at it and say, I am willing to take 6 hours of my life and $5 of my money and to go and learn something that can give me anywhere from 5 to 15 years of good, healthy life? I think tomorrow people have put together the VegFest here in Portland that could be the most instrumental thing in the rest of your life. Come down, take a look at it, taste the food, meet the people, see the cooking demonstrations, listen to the speakers, pick up some of the material. It may be the turning point of your life. It's like learning what part of the dial gets you to KBOO. Those are things you will never forget the rest of your life.
Well, Howard Lyman, thank you so much for this amazing hour. You've changed the world, and I have to have a grief process now about my yogurt. This is going to be really hard. Everything else was easy, but yogurt, I don't know. This is going to be hard.
There is vegan yogurt out there.
I'm going to do everything I can, Howard, to work with this issue. I want to thank you and send you the best of blessings. You're just an absolute, as I said, a national treasure and one of the real angel people on the planet.
Well, it's been a joy to be with you, and keep doing what you're doing, because when I drive down the road and I hear your interviews, they warm my heart.
Oh,
you know, there's somebody out there that's really thinking about what's really good for all humanity. And the interview you had before I went on, I was listening to it on the way down. I'm telling you what, right on. You do good work, gal.
Oh, thank you, Howard. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Hey, listen, have a great day. Watch out for the people who drink too much green beer tonight, and be safe.
I think it's impossible to drink too much green beer.
Okay, goodbye. That's Howard Lyman. We're going to let you know now that it's not 1 minute before the hour of 11. You are tuned to KBOO, your community radio station, 90.7 on the FM band. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com. This KBOO program has also been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from In Other Words Books and Resources, serving you from its new location at 8 Northeast Killingsworth at Williams. In Other Words is your local nonprofit feminist bookstore and resource center, offering community space, gifts, tools for the revolution, women's writings, and much more. Call 503-232-6003 or inotherwords.com. I'm Marlena Smith. I want to thank you for listening. Wish you a safe weekend and welcome to spring on Monday.